This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, March 28th, 2006. Today on Taking Aim, part two of The Nation magazine advances the CIA agenda. Last week, we discussed how, specifically, The Nation magazine was advancing the CIA agenda on the Warren Commission report, the official fiction about the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. Specifically, Nation contributing editor Max Holland, who writes extensively for the CIA and is published extensively by the CIA on the internet and in other publications. Max Holland had an article, February 20th, 2006 issue of The Nation magazine, The JFK's Lawyer's Conspiracy, which ostensibly was a report of the Assassination Archives and Research Center conference that took place in November of 2005. But instead, what Holland does is to slander, defame, shamelessly, attorney Mark Lane, author of Rush to Judgment, the first book that, in chapter and verse, analyzed the Warren Commission report. And Lane then went on over the years to research and write and speak out against the official fiction. Ralph?
The Holland attacks in the pages of The Nation, Maya, did not begin with this most recent series that was essentially produced and triggered by the production by Joan Mellon of her seminal work, A Farewell to Justice, that has driven Mr. Holland and his CIA sponsors into a virtual frenzy. But it's interesting because I want to emphasize the fact that what we have here in The Nation is an all-out attack by Max Holland on Joan Mellon, on Jim Garrison, of course, as the central villain for Holland, and on Mark Lane and on myself through Paisy Sarah, attacks that suggest that we are, not merely suggest, but state that we are instruments of the KGB, that we were engaged in a KGB disinformation campaign that resulted in Max Holland and The Nation magazine maintain that it is the KGB fabrication about the CIA's role in the murder of Kennedy that was picked up by Jim Garrison as its dupe and willing instrument, and that as a consequence, decades of political life in the United States were poisoned, and the whole of the 60s radicalization can be ascribed by, as it is by Holland in The Nation, to the disinformation of the KGB imputing to the CIA responsibility for the murder of Kennedy as a KGB-planted story. Now, I want to make a parenthetical remark. First of all, I want to alert our listeners. We are calling and we are organizing a boycott of The Nation magazine through our heroes in Pacifica and through the efforts of Mark Lane and others. We are asking all Nation subscribers to cancel their subscription until the CIA agent and instrument and asset, Max Holland, is removed as a contributing editor to The Nation, at the very least. And we will be discussing in the course of this program and in programs to follow not only the role of Max Holland, but who is the editor of The Nation, Katrina Vandenhoevel, and her father, William Vandenhoevel, who was one of the CIA participants, and along with Wild Bill Donovan, the founder of the CIA. We'll deal with that and the collateral organizations in which they are involved and the implications for The Nation and its readers. We are calling for a cancellation of subscriptions to The Nation by all those who are concerned about the truth and about the uses of The Nation as an instrument of CIA attack propaganda upon critics of the role of the government in great crime in the United States. Let me make one particular point about the accusations made by Max Holland and the Central Intelligence Agency concerning the role of the KGB in supposedly supporting and creating the movement to expose the CIA's role and that of the authorities in the murder of Kennedy. The irony of all this is that the position of the Soviet Union and of the Communist Party at the time of the Kennedy assassination, everywhere, was that the Warren Commission was correct, that Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone assassin. The Nation magazine under Carrie McWilliams and then under Victor Novasky, not only Katrina VandenHeuvel, maintained that the Warren Report had saved us. The CP's position was that the original assassination, they well understood, was carried out with the intention of imputing this to a Cuban instrument and a Soviet defector, Lee Harvey Oswald, so that the original plotters were intending that the, just like with 9/11, the creating a casus belli, so with the Kennedy assassination, it was intended to prepare for the invasion of Cuba, the saturation bombing of Cuba, and even a nuclear preemptive strike on the Soviet Union. So consequently, the role of the Soviet Union and the KGB and of the Communist Party and its supporters and fellow travelers, including in the Nation itself, was to say, Earl Warren has saved us. It's a lone nut. It's Lee Harvey Oswald. He had no connection to any conspiracy. And thereby they provided the main effort on the part of the pseudo-left to conceal the role of the CIA itself. Let me give you a concrete example of what this means. The Soviet Union at the time favored Communist Party and sympathizing writers. For example, when the Soviet Union wanted to give material support to a writer in the West, like Howard Fast, they published his books in the millions of copies and paid him royalties for it. Mark Lane's book, Rush to Judgment, was never published in the Soviet Union. It was never published in any of the Stalinist regime countries of Eastern Europe. It was never published in China. It was never published in any Stalinist state. Rush to Judgment was published in Franco's Spain, but no single, quote-unquote, communist country ever published Rush to Judgment. No royalty was ever paid to Mark Lane for an article published by the Soviet Union. If the KGB had any interest in orchestrating Rush to Judgment, all they had to do was publish the book. All they had to do was to invite an article by Mark Lane, never once. Why is that, brothers and sisters? Why is the CP and the Nation so adamant in upholding the CIA's fiction about the Kennedy assassination? Not because the KGB wanted to support the thesis that the CIA killed Kennedy. That was the work of Jim Garrison, of Mark Lane, of the Bertrand Russell Peace Foundation, of the Who Killed Kennedy Committee, of those of us who are exposing the real role of the Central Intelligence Agency, of Malcolm X. The irony of all this is that this fabrication by the Central Intelligence Agency that it was KGB propaganda and disinformation to expose the role of CIA in the Kennedy killing comes not from the KGB but from the CIA itself.
Ralph, in Holland's response to the letters that were responding to his article in The Nation, he refers to the Matrokin Archive, and in your excised portion of your letter, you had referred to the Matrokin Archive as the source of the KGB disinformation story, the KGB as the source of the critics. And in The Sword and the Shield, the Matrokin Archive and the Secret History of the KGB by Christopher Andrew, who himself is a British intelligence asset, and Vasily Matrokin, who supposed defector.
Christopher Andrew is not merely MI6, as you correctly indicate, but he's more than that. Christopher Andrew is Central Intelligence Agency. He lectures for the Central Intelligence Agency, and the entire we'll deal with the Matrokin in some great depth, but go on, please.
I wanted to first read the original statement as it appeared in The Sword and the Shield, and The Sword and the Shield was published by Basic Books, and Basic Books is one of the main publishing houses. It's a member of the Perseus Books Group, and it's copyright 1999. And on page 227 in the chapter Political Warfare, which is Chapter 14, Political Warfare, Active Measures, and the Main Adversary. This is what is written by Christopher Andrews. The KGB correctly identified the New York lawyer Mark Lane as the most talented of the first wave of conspiracy theorists researching the JFK assassination. According to one report made on him, probably by the New York residency, now they're talking about the residency, meaning the group of KGB agents resident in New York, and this is what supposedly the Matrokin Archive, Volume 6, Chapter 14, Part 3, these handwritten notes, and we'll go into what the Matrokin Archive is in a moment. Supposedly, the Matrokin Archive states that the KGB New York residency wrote, quote, Mark Lane is well known as a person with close ties to Democratic Party circles in the U.S. He holds liberal views on a number of current American political problems and has undertaken to conduct his own private investigation of the circumstances surrounding the murder of J. Kennedy. Then they go on to say about Mark Lane. Together with student assistants and other volunteers, Lane founded the Citizens Committee of Inquiry in a small office on Lower Fifth Avenue and rented a small theater at which each evening for several months he gave what became known as the speech, updating the development of his conspiracy theory. Quote, this alternative method of dissent was required, writes Lane, because not a single network radio or television program permitted the broadcast of a word of divergence from the official view. That's how Mark Lane stated. And now for the statement that Holland goes and amplifies and slanders Lane with. Though it dared not take the risk of contacting Lane directly, the New York residency sent him $1,500, which Holland in the Nation puts in $2,005 as $12,500, and was noted as being $1,500 back in the 1960s, to help finance his research through the intermediary of a close friend, whom Lane's KGB file identifies only as a trusted contact. While Lane was not told the source of the money, the residency suspected that he might have guessed where it came from. It was also concerned that the secret subsidy might be discovered by the FBI. And this is from the Matrokin Archive, Volume 6, Chapter 14, Part 3. Ralph.
Maya, the reply of Max Holland to the devastating responses from Joan Mellon, and we haven't dealt with Jim Lazar's extraordinary letter in the Nation, which on behalf of the ARC. But let me just deal with how Holland responds to this. Apparently, a word needs to be said about the article I wrote for Studies in the Intelligence, a journal published by the CIA. The first iteration of this story, which exposed the impact of Soviet disinformation on Jim Garrison's persecution of Clay Shaw, appeared in the spring 2001 Wilson Quarterly. However, the Quarterly, like the Nation, does not run footnoted articles, and I wanted a documented version to appear since I had conducted interviews and research in Italy and into CIA documents in the National Archives, and there are only four English-language journals that print scholarly articles on intelligence, and if one is so inclined, it is a snap to prove they are all CIA-connected. Studies is the oldest, so I went there first. That's the whole story. Now to some brass tacks. Joan Mellon and Mark Lane make much of a CIA document that sounds sinister until you read it and put it into context. The document was written in April 1967, the height of the bout of madness, otherwise known as the Garrison investigation, and as one of the government agencies accused of complicity in the assassination, the CIA was very concerned about having such allegations gaining widespread acceptance in the midst of the Cold War. innuendo of such seriousness of facts, the whole reputation of the American government, observed the CIA. So the agency launched the campaign using its media assets to counter criticism of the Warren Report by the likes of Mellon Lane and others. Is that really shocking? Joan Mellon's penchant for accuracy can be summed up in the fact that she cannot bother to spell correctly the names of Edo Papaleone and Gianfranco Corsini. Ordinarily, this would be nitpicking, but in this instant, it is a window into the miasma of bald lies, misrepresentations, and truthiness that she calls a book. Now, Holland goes on to say the following. I find it illuminating that Lane has taken no legal action, not even in Britain, against the authors Christopher Andrew and KGB archivist Vasily Mitrokhin and publishers of the 1999 volume that revealed, quote, the KGB's New York residency sent Lane $1,500 to help finance his research through an intermediary. That doesn't necessarily mean it came in a lump sum. And neither Andrew Mitrokhin nor I allege that Lane was a witting recipient, just a useful one. All the reliable forensic and scientific evidence developed around the JFK case supports or does not negate the findings of the Warren Report, he writes. Now, I'm going to address, there's some more blather in the Holland reply, but he isn't able to address a single fact, and it's important, I think, to take note of the response that I made and others made to this latest bout of disinformation.
Ralph, it's also important to note that Holland accepts as credible that the CIA and other intelligence agencies such as the FBI have a right to spread their propaganda, their disinformation in the press.
Well, more than that, as you say, that's very correct. It's an important point, Maya, because Holland is saying it's perfectly natural and acceptable that he admits as our media assets, that is to say, planted journalists in every mainstream newspaper, including The Nation, are fed real intelligence disinformation, which is understandable, says Max Holland, and something that should be accepted as a norm, namely that journalists are not independent writers, but they are paid instruments of the Central Intelligence Agency. This is the position that Max Holland is celebrating in the pages of The Nation with the endorsement of The Nation, which allows
him to do
this.
Well, it's a definite endorsement because he's a contributing editor to The Nation.
I wrote the following to The Nation. Max Holland is fully exposed as a CIA writer promoting disinformation on its behalf. Holland, quote, explains, unquote, his role with the grotesque notion that he writes for the CIA because they publish his footnotes. Yet The Nation allows Holland to print in its issue of March 20th further egregious libel without citation. E.g., that Joan Mellon's A Farewell to Justice is a miasma of bald lies, unquote. Now, I should mention that the typo in which the G is left out of Edo Parpaglioni's name is all that Holland can come up with. And on that basis, the letter continues. Mr. Holland's current frenzy arises directly from the fact that Professor Mellon's 8-year investigation located the decisive documents establishing the CIA's organization of the assassination and obtained the testimony of critical witnesses such as Thomas Edward Beckham, who was assigned to the conspiracy and prepared as the backup patsy. She breaks the case, hence the venom of your CIA-sponsored contributing editor. In the words of Joseph Welch, have you no shame? Her book deserves a serious review in your pages. As to my friend, Edo Papaleone, he neither worked on the Paesi Serra investigation nor on the series itself, not having been assigned to either. So much for Holland's concern for accuracy. When asked, how would you describe the charge that Paesi Serra was a conduit for disinformation of the KGB, Edo responded, as a conscious lie, disinformation itself. Your readers are entitled to know that Christopher Andrew, who wrote The Sword and the Shield, touted by Mr. Holland, is himself a lecturer for the CIA. His co-author, Vasily Mitrokhin, defected from the KGB through the CIA to MI6, for whom he worked. Mr. Andrew, moreover, sits on a board with Peter Ernest, 36 CIA officer with 20 years in its clandestine services, KGB Major General Oleg Kalugin, who defected after years of contact with the CIA, Lieutenant General Claudia J. Kennedy, former Deputy Chief of Staff for Army Intelligence, ex-CIA Director Stansfield Turner, ex-CIA and FBI Director William Webster, Eugene Poteet, President of the Association of Former Intelligence Officers, David J. G. Major, FBI Counterintelligence and Director of Counterintelligence, Intelligence and Security in the National Security Council, Jonah Mendez, CIA Office of Technical Services, and Richard Schroeder, 30 years in CIA clandestine services and Directorate of Operations for the U.S. Military Command in Vietnam. Finally, Andrew Mitrokhin, Patche Holland, have accused falsely former British Labour Party leader Neil Kinnock and Deputy Prime Minister Michael Foot, through his aide, Tribune editor Dick Clements, of acting for the KGB. Real lies debunked fully in the British Parliament and in The Guardian. What has happened to the nation? Ralph Schoenman, co-producer, WBAI's Taking Aim. Now, the nation struggled about this letter, and they finally wrote back to say, well, we'll be glad to forward it as a private communication to Max Holland. Private communication? But they won't allow this documentation about what is the Mitrokhin and Andrew disinformation campaign about to appear in the pages of the nation. This expose that this is, these are people central to the counterintelligence apparatus of the National Security Council, of the Defense Intelligence Agency, of the Central Intelligence Agency. This is the nexus of this coordinated media asset campaign. And the nation won't allow its readers to know this? We call for a boycott of this publication and for canceling of subscriptions until Max Holland is removed, at the very least.
Ralph, I think it's time to look at the Mitrokhin archive, critical to the spreading the disinformation about the KGB role in any critique of the official fiction of the Kennedy assassination, but not just the Kennedy assassination. The Mitrokhin archive was used as a direct assault against the Labour Party in England and also against the Indian government. And an important series of papers appears on the internet with the South Asia Analysis Group, SAAG, and their website is www.saag.org. And the papers are by B. Raman, R-A-M-A-N. And B. Raman was in the cabinet secretariat, he's retired, of the government of India, and now he's the director of the Institute for Topical Studies, Chennai, and a distinguished fellow, International Terrorism Watch Program, Observer Research Foundation, and a convener of its Chennai chapter. This is a three-part series on the Mitrokhin mystery. It's paper number 1549, 50, and 52. Who is Vasily Mitrokhin, is his first question. And Vasily Mitrokhin, after completing his education in an artillery school of the Soviet Army, he rose to the rank of major. In 1948, he joined the MGB, which, as the KGB was known until 1953. He was in the Foreign Intelligence Section, and he served in a number of foreign countries until 1956. In 1956, however, the Soviet intelligence agency, the KGB, reprimanded Matrokhin for an unsatisfactory performance when he was attached to one of the intelligence and security teams at the Olympic Games in Australia. And Matrokhin never again served in a foreign role in the intelligence operation, and he retired in 1985. Before he retired, Matrokhin says that he was assigned to the KGB archives, and that he was responsible for the shifting from one building to another between 1972 and 1984. Now notice, this is, he says, a 12-year period in order to shift files from one building to another, that he was responsible for the supervising the safe transfer of the KGB archives. And that during this time, every day, he used to copy on pieces of paper in his own handwriting the contents of important files, and he would secretly take them home at night, type them, and conceal them inside milk churns. In the article, it refers to milk cartons, but actually these are milk churns that are used for churning milk into butter. And he would hide these under the floor of his house. Thus, he copied in his own hand and typed 25,000 pages of allegedly sensitive information over a period of 12 years. Now, this information is in four sections. There were the K series of handwritten material, which he had in large envelopes, the T series of handwritten notebooks. Then he had volumes of typed material that was arranged by country, sometimes with his own commentary. And then he had a fragmentary series of miscellaneous handwritten notes. Now, Matrokhin first offered his services to the Central Intelligence Agency. And Ralph, you have a very interesting analysis of why the CIA sent Matrokhin on his way. They weren't interested in Matrokhin and his supposed archive. He then went to the United Kingdom to the Secret Intelligence Service, the SIS, which is popularly known as MI6. But first, let's look at Matrokhin's overtures to the CIA, where he was rebuffed.
Well, Maya, I think it's important that we understand, just to jump ahead a moment, that the so-called Matrokhin file was orchestrated by the all the intelligence agencies, the former director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey, DCIR, called this the closest we will ever come to a full history of the KGB from 1918 to 1985, and they orchestrated it in the Sunday Times in London, in the Times in London, on Amazon.com, in the Philadelphia Inquirer, in the New York Times, in the Washington Post. This was a full-court press across the world with this total intelligence disinformation. When Matrokhin, who was actually a very low-level KGB file clerk, essentially, made his first approach to the Central Intelligence Agency, propositioning them and approaching the CIA about providing them with files from the KGB, it was in the midst of the hysteria and frenzy of James Jesus Angleton, who was the director of counterintelligence for the Central Intelligence Agency, when, in fact, there was a defector from the KGB that was disclosing to the Central Intelligence Agency that Lee Harvey Oswald, which they what they already knew, was really their own man, Angleton went nuts. And Angleton had that man, that attempted defector from the KGB, held in total isolation and tortured for years. And Angleton was convinced that the KGB was in fact on to the CIA's planting of Oswald when he was a CIA-arranged defector to the Soviet Union. And consequently, Angleton refused to allow for actual defectors from the KGB to be taken into the CIA program because he was suspicious that they were doubling for the KGB still. The irony of it all is that Mitrokhin repeatedly attempted to get the CIA to take the initiative in funding him and facilitating him. And when the cause of the Angleton attitude, the CIA demurred, he was handed over to MI6. It was MI5 and MI6 who then stood in for the CIA and facilitated the entire set of fabrications. Now,
Ralph, let's mention here that in the Mitrokhin archive, there are no original KGB documents or even copies of original documents. In other words, there is no direct evidential value in these documents.
No, they cannot produce a single document because no such document exists. And the official fairy tale fiction is that this low-level operative, and you have to understand because Amaya B. Rahman does the analysis for the South Asia group, and the South Asia group does a total demolition of an expose of what this Mitrokhin Andrew facade is about.
And we will continue with this after this station ID. You are listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The Nation magazine advances the CIA agenda, part two.
So put this into its perspective, brothers and sisters. Here you have a low-level functionary in the file clerk of the KGB. He approaches the CIA. The CIA hands him off to MI5 and MI6. He doesn't have a single document. He represents that he, over a period of 12 years, hand-copied 300,000 documents, and that his notes, without a single photocopy of a single document, are what the MI6 people are to make use of. Now, why was MI6 pursuing this with respect to an obvious fabricated scenario? For the very straightforward reason, as B. Rahman makes clear, in the past, British intelligence was not well disposed towards the Labour Party and other political leaders and intellectuals to the left of the political spectrum. That's to put it mildly, brothers and sisters. MI6, remember what we were doing with Paisley Sarah? Remember how we were investigating the role of the Central Intelligence Agency in trying to effect and accomplishing a fascist coup in Greece? Remember how we were documenting their role in what became known as P2 and Operation Gladio in attempting a coup d'etat in Italy through CIA front organizations? What do you think they were doing in Great Britain? MI6 was plotting to overthrow the government of Harold Wilson. We lived through this. We documented this. They actually seized Heathrow Airport. They had military personnel surrounding the airport. There was an actual attempted military coup in Great Britain against the government of Prime Minister Harold Wilson of the Labour Party by MI6. And the South Asia expose of this by B. Rahman of India, and by the way, we will explain how the Indians come into this because this plot was also unfolding within India. I can tell you that in 1963, on behalf of Bertrand Russell, I was engaged in negotiating with Nehru and Zhou Enlai over the Sino-Indian boundary dispute. The United States and its defense agencies, through the Indian military, had virtually confined Nehru under house arrest. And they had changed the border configuration between China and India. They were seeking to obtain an advanced border into Tibet in the Aksai Chin area of the Sino-Indian boundary. I was involved in negotiating a resolution to that. And the Minister of Defense of Nehru was V.K. Krishnamenon. Krishnamenon had been a student of Bertrand Russell. He was a man of the left. When I went to New Delhi to meet Nehru, when he was under house arrest, it was Krishnamenon who told me where he was being held in Kashmir. We managed to get through and to see Nehru at the time. That's a whole story in itself. This attempt to stage a coup in India and to use the precipitating change of border as a casus belli with China is linked and related to the efforts to make such coups in Great Britain, in Italy, in Greece. It is not unrelated to the Kennedy execution itself, and this, the South Asia group, has thoroughly exposed here, and it writes, in the past, the British intelligence was never well disposed towards the Labour Party. It used to project the Labour Party as riddled with KGB agents. It suspected that Labour Prime Minister Harold Wilson was a KGB agent in 1992. When the Conservative government, it writes, headed by John Major, was in power, Vasily Matrokhin walked in with tons of notes kept by him, allegedly showing that Labour leaders whom the British intelligence wanted to establish as KGB agents were in fact KGB agents. Matrokhin did not name any Conservative leaders being in touch with the KGB, and it is significant that MI6 and MI5 in the Internal Security Services did not prosecute any of the persons accused by Matrokhin to be KGB agents.
Ralph, among these were Neil Kinnock, former leader of the British Labour Party, and Matrokhin states that the Committee on Nuclear Disarmament, in which 133 Labour MPs were members at one time or another, was in receipt of funds from the KGB, essentially funded by the KGB. There are many people, Tom Dryberg, a former Labour Party member of Parliament, Raymond Fletcher, another former member of Parliament, and it's a very long list in this extensive volume.
Well, actually, Maya, they used the Oleg Petrovsky, another MI6 operative, to accuse the Deputy Prime Minister of Great Britain, my old friend Michael Foot, of being a KGB operative, and Michael immediately sued the
Sunday Times, the Rupert Murdoch publication.
Yeah, Michael sued the Rupert Murdoch publication. They had to, they of course Michael won that lawsuit. The entire CIA MI6 disinformation campaign blew up in their faces when the courts found that it was entirely fabricated. Not only was Rupert Murdoch held guilty and was the Sunday Times held responsible for this libel, but they had to retract it ignominiously, and they had to pay substantial damages to Michael Foot. And yet, the lie is perpetuated. And here is the we will come. I want to return, and we need to go through thoroughly this expose of the delineation, the unfolding of the Matrokhin and Christopher Andrew operation. But here in the Guardian on September 21st, 1999, former labor leaders scorn spy claims. Two former leaders of the Labour Party have dismissed contemptuously allegations that they were agents of influence for the KGB. Neil Kinnock, Labour Party leader, and Michael Foot have sprung to the defense of Tribune editor Dick Clements, who is named by the Sunday Times as Agent Dan. In a letter to the Guardian, Mr. Kinnock says, Mr. Clements has worked for office manager for both Labour leaders, was never a Soviet agent of any kind. And indeed, the irony of this is that Dick Clements, who was the aide to Michael Foot, was the editor of the independent left publication Tribune. We knew Tribune extremely well. Tribune was anti-Soviet. I don't mean by that they were anti-communist, but they were critical of Stalinism. They were critical of the Soviet Union. They were not instruments of Soviet policy, quite as Dick Clement so eloquently pointed out, and Neil Kinnock, the head of the Labour Party. All of this disinformation of the Andrew Matrokhin fabrications, like those of Max Holland and The Nation, were thoroughly debunked and exposed in the British Parliament, in the Guardian. The Guardian had a series of articles. And indeed, the report in The Guardian, ex-editor dismisses spy claim. Former Tribune man calls KGB allegations laughable. Mr. Clements said he was angry at these silly allegations. There's a feeding frenzy about spies, and all these fake allegations are being thrown around and are utter nonsense. Anyone reading Tribune during my editorship knew we took a very hostile view of Soviet foreign and domestic policy, and so on. This is the classic example of the media assets serving an agenda here. It's not only in the United States, brothers and sisters. It's not only in relation to the Kennedy assassination. It's right on target here in the nation. Why are they so hysterical? Because we're exposing the role of the CIA, but above all, we're linking it to 9/11. We're linking it to the current treason at the top. We're connecting the dots. We're providing the evidence, and that's what this is about.
Ralph, the Matrokin documents were published in 1999, but in 1997, the Tony Blair, as head of the Labor government, came to power. And what's interesting, and is exposed by B. Rahman, is that the MI5 and MI6 did not inform the Labor government about what they were doing with the publication of the Matrokin exposés, in which are major attacks against members of the Labor Party. And I think this is an important section of the B. Rahman, and he goes into great detail, more detail than we have time on Taking Aim to analyze and to present. He says that they were ignorant of the fact that while MI5 and MI6 did not consider the allegations voiced by Matrokin strong and credible enough to warrant action against anybody, they chose to have them disseminated in public through a book written by an academic who was an embedded analyst of the intelligence agencies.
In other words, Maya, let's be explicit here with what Rahman has exposed. MI6 and MI5 knew that Matrokin had nothing. It would be physically impossible, as Rahman establishes in documents, for a file clerk in the KGB. See, the KGB standard procedures that no sensitive documents could be in any way removed or looked at by, not even were they allowed to be accessed by a person alone. One always had to have, as a matter of KGB procedure, as this document establishes, a senior KGB officer overseeing any access to these kinds of sensitive materials. Matrokin never had them. He never saw them.
Another part mentioned, not just by B. Rahman, but by other intelligence analysts, is that high-level secret information is not placed in archives. They remain in special areas with the counterintelligence agencies themselves. They don't go into the dead files, and where Matrokin was the supposedly what the dead files of
now here,
the KGB.
Here's a very important point that Rahman makes. The Parliamentary Intelligence and Security Committee, to which the matter is referred by the Tony Blair government, did not question the decision of the agencies to have the papers published. Now, what's interesting about that is that the Labor government had been totally kept out of the loop. This was a plot of the conservatives to discredit Labor and to present them as KGB agents and their leaders as such in order to try to defeat Labor in the elections. That's a classic. That's what the CIA was doing across Europe. So how does Christopher Andrew come into the picture? They promised Matrokin that if they didn't have the ability to act on his accusations, because he didn't have any documents, they would find an intelligence asset, and they would have him publish them as a book. What was Christopher Andrew's role in the controversy following the publication of this volume? Asks Rahman. Richard Tomlinson, the MI6 officer who played a role in the clandestine transfer of these notes by Matrokin, he fell out with the agency. And he began to expose the entire fabrication and something else. Richard Tomlinson, the MI6 officer who was the point man in this Matrokin matter, fell out with them and began to reveal that MI6 was preparing to have Colonel Gaddafi of Libya assassinated. Richard Tomlinson exposed the role of MI6 in the supply of chemical weapons to Saddam Hussein during the Iran-Iraq war. Richard Tomlinson exposed the role of CIA and MI6 in the plan to break up Yugoslavia. and to balkanize Yugoslavia and to foment ethnic internecine conflict in Yugoslavia. When MI6 tried to have Tomlinson arrested, he fled to Switzerland and from there to Italy, where he launched a website exposing the identities of the MI6 officers and all of these plots, including the fabricated campaign with respect to Mitrokhin. The agency was in deep doo-doo. No Western publisher would touch the manuscript, and consequently, Tomlinson approached a Russian publisher. This is after the fall of the Soviet Union, and the publisher was Krashin. The book was entitled The Big Breach, and it was published by Russian publishers in January 2001. So what did they do? MI5 and MI6 turns to their agent Christopher Andrew to embark on a campaign to discredit the Tomlinson book, The Big Breach. And Andrew writes on a subject called Russia's Revenge in the London Times, and indeed the Russian publishers included in the last chapter of Tomlinson's book a detailed statement on the circumstances leading to the publication. And so Raman says, now what we see is we have two books before us. One is written by Christopher Andrew at the direction of MI6, jointly with Vasily Mitrokhin, a low-grade clerk of the KGB archives, accusing the KGB of unethical practices and leveling the gravest charges against various people. But the other book is by the point man involved in that original enterprise, the former MI6 officer, who was the man who played the role in getting Mitrokhin out of Russia, who now has accused MI6 of its role not only in the Mitrokhin affair, not only in the plans to slander the leaders of the Labor Party, to slander the Mark Lane and those of us who were involved in the expose of the Kennedy assassination, but also Richard Tomlinson, ex-MI6, point man in this affair, exposes the plots of MI6 and CIA to assassinate Muammar Gaddafi, the supply of biochemical agents to Saddam Hussein. This is a hornet's nest, brothers and sisters. Max Holland, you don't know what you've unleashed here by celebrating the fabricated documents of Mitrokhin and of Christopher Andrew. You're exposing the whole murder apparatus that the Bertrand Russell Peace Foundation, that Joan Mellon, that Jim Garrison, that Mark Lane, that all of us irregulars over a period of four decades have been trying so ardently to make known to the peoples of the world, from the Kennedy killing to the events of 9/11, brothers and sisters. It is the criminalization of the state. It is the murder apparatus of the degenerated capitalist system that is required to kill and to murder and to take out the peoples of the world as their enemies through every scheme and plot. That's what's at work here. And what is the nation doing as the instrument for orchestrating this program? Boycott that publication until Max Holland is removed.
Ralph, you mentioned India before and the Mitrokhin slanders of Indian leaders. These include Indira Gandhi, V.K. Krishnamenon himself, with whom you met and arranged for you to see Nehru, and many others.
And Maya, just let me point out to you that after my meetings with Nehru, a series of meetings in Kashmir, and I flew to Sri Lanka to meet with Madam Bandaranaike, who was Prime Minister of Sri Lanka, then known as Ceylon, and the head of the Colombo powers, Bandaranaike embraced what we were doing, and particularly she was, as a leader of a neutral country, very apprehensive about the U.S. attempts to stage a putsch in India, very supportive of our efforts to expose the U.S. plan to destabilize the Sino-Indian border and to promote a war between India and China. And when I went to meet with Zhou Enlai, it was 16 hours of meetings with Zhou Enlai over all this. Bertrand Russell wrote about this in Unarmed Victory. Indira Gandhi, who was a young woman at the time, the daughter of Nehru, who soon to become the Prime Minister of India. Nehru died, and Indira Gandhi and Lal Bahadur Shastri, who succeeded Nehru as Prime Minister, and Morarji Desai, who was the Finance Minister of the time and later to become a Prime Minister, they all came to Bertrand Russell's home in London at 43 Hasker Street in Chelsea, where we had a conference meeting about the full implications of all of this. Indira Gandhi was no KGB instrument. Indira Gandhi or V.K. Krishnamenon, they were resistant to the attempts of the CIA to stage its coup in India, as they were trying to do in Italy, and as they accomplished in Greece, and as they accomplished in the United States, because that's what the Kennedy execution was, a coup d'etat in America.
Ralph, let's return in the last few minutes to The Nation magazine. The Nation magazine advances the CIA agenda. Why is The Nation magazine advancing the CIA agenda? And what is the composition of the editorial staff now of The Nation magazine?
Well, Maya, I think that's a very important subject that we have to deal with. I don't mind if we come to it now, but I can say, brothers and sisters, it's not even the tip of the iceberg. The analysis of the South Asia group about the real nature of the Matrokhin documents, we've just dealt with the beginnings of part one. There's a part two and a part three, and the documentation is extraordinary, and it's a kind of insight into the politics of the last four decades. And we're going to have a part three and a part four. This is too important. The material is too explosive. The documentation is too overwhelming for us to just summarize it in this fashion. Katrina Vandenhoevel is the editor of The Nation. Maya, Katrina Vandenhoevel is a member of the Board of Trustees. She is also an owner of The Nation, being one of a handful of investors that bought it. Her father, William J. Vandenhoevel, served between 1953 and 1954 as executive assistant to the founder of the Central Intelligence Agency, William Wild Bill Donovan. And during Donovan's tour as U.S. ambassador to Thailand, William Vandenhoevel became a member of the board, a board member of the Farfield Foundation, which is a noted CIA front group. By the 1960s, Vandenhoevel was special assistant to New York Governor Averell Harriman and then to U.S. Attorney General Robert Kennedy. Vandenhoevel was chairman of the Jimmy Carter New York primary campaign, and following Carter's victory, Vandenhoevel was the deputy permanent representative to the United Nations.
Ralph, you have to go back a little bit, because William Vandenhoevel was special assistant to Robert Kennedy at the very time that Robert Kennedy was orchestrating the assassination of Fidel Castro.
Not only that, but the point man for the murder of Fidel, yes, as you say, was Robert Kennedy. Now, I want to mention a particular matter here that bears on this, because when Ramsey Clark was Attorney General of the United States, of Lyndon Johnson, Ramsey, in that time of his life, played a rather key role in attempting to destroy the investigation of Jim Garrison. He was one of those who worked with the FBI and with others to seek to not only infiltrate Garrison's office, but to undermine him. And Ramsey, who is a man who is an extraordinary figure and has radicalized since then, is the first to acknowledge the role that he played. In fact, what Ramsey did, however, was to disclose something of great importance. Ramsey told me, as he did Joan Mellon, that when he assumed the office of Attorney General, and he looked in the drawer of the desk of Robert Kennedy, whom he had succeeded, he found their memorandum from Edward Lansdale to Robert Kennedy, in which they were discussing the various modes through which they would organize and orchestrate the assassination of Fidel Castro. And interestingly enough, as Joan Mellon exposes, one of the people who was being closely monitored in all of this period before John Kennedy was killed was none other than the FBI and CIA asset Lee Harvey Oswald. I will not go there further now other than to say the following. Vandenhoevel brought his daughter Katrina into the board of directors of New York City's Correctional Association, but also onto the board of governors of a group that William Vandenhoevel co-chairs called FERI, the Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt Institute. Now, the Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt Institute is, in fact, a CIA conduit. Vandenhoevel was also deeply involved as a director on the board of the International Rescue Committee, which is another CIA conduit, and in particular, the National Endowment for Democracy. And we're going to detail exactly what this nexus. Now, this is very important, brothers and sisters. The sins of the father are not necessarily visited upon the offspring of that person. It is not because Katrina Vandenhoevel, editor of The Nation, is the daughter of William Vandenhoevel that her role is of some significance here. It is rather that she is not merely the daughter, but she is on the board of trustees of the FERI, of the Franklin Eleanor Roosevelt Institute, and we will detail exactly what that means. She is, as well, a officer, along with her father, of the Council on Foreign Relations. So FERI and the Council on Foreign Relations and the National Endowment for Democracy and the IRC, the International Rescue Committee, these are not anodyne organizations. We will detail exactly what they do and to whom they do it. That's why Max Hall has a home in The Nation, brothers and sisters.
This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, part two of The Nation magazine, advances the CIA agenda. You can reach us at takingaim@pacbell.net. Our programs are archived on our website, www.takingaim.info. We'll be with you next week.
Join the National